Fundamentally, sports is about power, and not just on the field. New York Times reporter Michael Powell saw that firsthand when he spent a season covering high school basketball at Chinle High School in the Navajo Nation in Arizona. The story he tells in his book, Canyon Dreams, is about basketball and a lot more, as Steve Paulson discovered.
So res basketball, basketball in the reservation, is a really big deal, right?
It's a really big deal. As one of the coaches said, he said the five biggest sports on the reservation are basketball, 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 rodeo, or the reverse.
So this is a particular style of ball?
Yes. It's res ball, which is this incredibly fast-paced, run, 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 pass, 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 cut, cut, cut. Played well, it's beautiful.
Where does that style come from?
Yeah, it really comes out of, I think, their history and their culture. The Bureau of Indian Affairs for generations used to come and force families to give up their kids that would go to faraway boarding schools where the idea, as they said, was to, you know, basically burn the Indian out of them, and they would wash out their mouths if they spoke Navajo and all this kind of thing. They started playing basketball at these places, and what is sort of wonderful is that they made it their own. And how so? Number one, running, distance running, goes deep into all the tribes of the Southwest, the Hopis, the Pueblo tribes, the Apache, and the Navajo. And the other is they have a very communal culture. So basketball, this kind of the idea of 5 or 10 kids melding together, very much kind of fits in with their culture. It's interesting when they really get going, they'll often bring in players in groups. It's almost like hockey, a whole separate slot of guys
coming
in.
So you have like 5 guys subbing out and then 5 new guys, and they just run at full speed.
Yes, yes. Run, run, run. Now, played badly, it can be chaotic. Like all sports, done well, it's a thing of beauty, and done not so well, it's not so much a thing of beauty.
Well, and I would think especially if they're playing teams off the res, the white kids who are sometimes quite big, maybe they can run circles around them.
That's a great point, because it's very interesting to watch them play teams off the res, particularly Anglo teams, white teams. Almost invariably, in fact, I think with this team, they played their best games against those sort of teams because there was a sort of a concentration, frankly, a matter of pride. So these big teams would come in very often. Front lines, 6'6", 6'7". I mean, the tallest kid on the Navajo team was 6'3". After that, there was one kid who was 6 foot. Everybody else was under 6 foot.
So why is basketball such a big deal on the reservation?
Well, at this point, it's generational. Families will come in, great-grandparents, grandparents, parents, cousins, aunties and uncles. It's not unusual to see from any one of the players' families 15, 18 people come to a game. They'll sit there through the ninth grade games, ninth grade girls and boys, JV boys and girls, varsity boys and girls. So they'll be there for 6 hours, a lot of these families.
So this is the big social event.
This is the event. And they'll have 5,000 people. I mean, Chinle is a town of 3,500. They'll have 5,000 at big games.
So they come in from the...
all over the place. Wow. Guys will hitchhike in from the outback. All of those generations have played hoop. And to dominate at the high school level is like the Everest for Navajo because, particularly with the boys, they don't go on. They're not big enough to play big D1 schools. I mean, they just can't do that. So that most of them, this is it. A few will play community college ball.
You got to know the coach of this team, this 70-year-old guy who had spent decades coaching, not so much at this school, but all kinds of different schools, mostly on different parts of various reservations. Tell me about him.
Yeah, Raul Mendoza was a terrific character and kind of my, in a sense, my guide, because he was a Tono Odom Indian. I may have butchered the pronunciation, but it's a tribe, quite poor tribe, that spans the border. Mexico and Arizona, and came north, taught himself English, got an education. He's coached essentially on the Navajo or the Apache, and the Apache are sort of their genetic cousins, the same Athabascan people. And he's coached on those reservations his entire life. He's married to a Navajo, but he's never of Navajo, and people know that. At the same time, he is a Native American, and he understands, you know, all of their cultural yearnings, the fears. Do you leave the reservation? If you leave, can you ever come back? Can you make your way in the Anglo world if you want to get an education? So he spends a lot of time on headwork, essentially, with these teenage boys.
So I'm assuming this is a lot more than just plotting out the X's and O's of basketball games. I mean, this is, I mean, he's a counselor. He's guiding these young men into figuring out what to do with their lives.
That is precisely how he conceives of his thing. As he says, you know, he's about turning around in 20 years and hopefully seeing most of these boys living productive, healthy lives. And that's not such an easy thing if you're coming from the reservation in northern Arizona.
Life is hard there for most of these kids, right?
Yes, it's very hard. It's an enormous place. It's the size of West Virginia. There's not much there. I mean, if you're, let's assume that you're one of those kids 5 years later and you've gotten yourself a college education, you come back, you could work as a school teacher. There's jobs at the hospital. And then there's a few other jobs. That's it. I mean, the unemployment runs 40% approximately. They deal with all the problems that confront not just Native Americans. I mean, certainly we're hearing a lot about rural America, right, and the terrible problems confronting whites in rural America. But I mean, they confront those same problems. But alcohol is their great carnivore, their great pursuer, and that's a big problem. And so, you know, if a kid comes back, let's say he's got a degree, and he comes back, and at first you're welcomed by all your hundreds of relatives, and everybody's really happy to see you, and then you look up a couple of months later, and it's like, well, now what do I do?
Yeah. I would think for you, as this Anglo reporter coming into the Navajo Nation, writing the story, it must have been hard. Was there any part of the story that was especially hard for you to understand? I don't know, maybe traditional Navajo beliefs?
Yes. I mean, certainly the traditional Navajo beliefs fascinated me, and it's a completely different cosmology.
You tell these stories that are just remarkable. I mean, stories of apparitions and shape-shifting and animals turning into people, and these weren't just once-in-a-lifetime kind of stories. I mean, it sounds like this stuff happened fairly often.
Oh, no, there is a profound belief in the immaterial there. I heard it from virtually everyone there. I first started to notice it when, before games, big games, the boys would all like roll up, you know, either bee pollen or different herbs into their socks. Every family would do a protection way prayer. Usually before the season, sometimes there would be prayers before big games. Now, you could say, well, you know, okay, in the NBA, you see guys pointing to the heavens or crossing themselves. This is different. This is a real sense that tonight there could be medicine men in the stands putting a hex on me, like doing things that are going to make it difficult for me to play well.
And does any of this seem to work?
They're convinced it does. There was one incident in particular. This was not while I was there. It was a couple years earlier. They'd played, I think it was on Hopi. And all of them, including the coach, Raul Mendoza, said that they felt like they were playing underwater the whole game. Everything was moving in slow motion. This was a very big game, like in a haze. All described the same thing. The next day, somebody that he knew, that Raul Mendoza knew, said, well, yeah, you've got to realize that the medicine men for the Hopi had put kachinas, their magical dolls, at all four corners of the arena and had done ceremonies before that were designed to leave you befogged. You know, who am I to say? I mean, you start to hear these stories. I mean, Mendoza, who, interestingly enough, was a Assemblies of God evangelical. He is a serious Christian. But, you know, he had a tale coming back. It was when he was coaching on Apache, and some of the families were angry that their kids weren't playing. And one of the families that was angry, the mother was a very powerful witch. He had been warned that she was going to put spells on him. And one night he's driving back through the White Mountains to his home, and his daughter is following behind in a car. He's in his pickup truck, and an enormous alabaster white owl, just enormous, dives right at his window in his telling. He kind of flinches, and at the last second, it zooms up into the air, doesn't hit the window, goes up over his car. Now the daughter picks up the story. She's about 100 yards behind him. It's middle of winter. There's snow on the ground. It comes down, lands on the asphalt right behind his truck, and turns into a white alabaster person and runs off into the woods. Raul and his daughter, they don't drink a lick. They are not, tellers of tall tales. They said this happened. Just it flat out happened.
So what do you do with those stories? You were in this culture for months, living there, listening to all of this. How do you process that?
I think there's, to the extent that I can figure these things out, I do believe that there is a notion of a collective unconscious. I heard too many of these stories from people in a matter-of-fact way. It wasn't like to make you scared. It's just like, this is life. So I guess I take them seriously. That's a different thing than saying I know what to make of them, because I don't. But I think the immaterial, the membrane between the material and the immaterial is so thin as at times almost not to exist. And who's to say that they aren't open for that reason to things that, lie in our dim past of our peoples?
Yeah. It's a great story. Thank you.
Thank you.
Michael Powell is a New York Times reporter and the author of Canyon Dreams. I talked with Steve Paulson.